1.5 million people have now escaped Russia's war in Ukraine. It's Europe's biggest refugee crisis since the end of the Second World War. Can the continent cope? And what should be the EU's policy response? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Fully Batibo. Russia's invasion of Ukraine has created 1.5 million refugees in just 10 days. The UN says it's the fastest growing refugee crisis in Europe since the Second World War. At least 63,000 Ukrainians have gone to Romania. Slovakia has received 101,000, while Moldova's president says more than 250,000 have arrived in her country. Nearly 160,000 are in Hungary, but the biggest number of Ukrainian refugees are in Poland, which has received more than 756,000. While refugees have been reporting having to wait for days to cross border checkpoints, aid agencies and volunteers are doing whatever they can to help.
I brought the kids to Romania with my mom and sister and her kids also. They're going to stay here and I'm going back to Ukraine.
I arrived with my sister and my children, but my husband and my mom stayed over there. We didn't want to come here, but my husband insisted on it.
It's kind of horrible because I had certain plans for my life in the upcoming months, and all of them are kind of shaken at the moment because I was planning to be present in Ukraine and Kiev in a lot of other cities. But now with the situation, I cannot continue neither anything related to my career back in Ukraine, and I kind of need to start over things again being in Poland.
Well, the UN's High Commissioner for Refugees has told Al Jazeera the flow of people will increase in the coming days.
What we also hear is that hundreds of thousands are on the move. So, and this is the prediction of the border guards here, who, by the way, are doing a very good job. They predict that the flow will increase, not decrease, in the next few days and perhaps beyond. Bombs continue to rain on cities. People will leave.
And the European Union Commission says it's going to take a lot of help to manage the influx.
The European Union, as Ukraine's neighbor, is sparing no effort. We're providing 500 million euros of humanitarian aid immediately, and more will come. We're working fast to establish civil protection hubs in Poland, in Slovakia, and in Romania. And we are also doing everything we can with international organizations and NGOs to set up humanitarian corridors that stretch inside Ukraine.
Well, let's now bring in our guests. In Warsaw, we have Monika Matus, a human rights activist and spokeswoman for Grupa Granica, a coalition of NGOs that's been supporting refugees. In Geneva, Babar Baluch, a spokesman for the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. And in Brussels, Alberto Neidhardt, policy analyst for the European Diversity and Migration Programme at the European Policy Centre. Thank you all for joining us on Inside Story. We appreciate your time. Monika, let me start with you in Warsaw, Poland. Your organisation has been on the front lines of this crisis. We're talking now about more than 500,000 refugees arriving in Poland alone in the last 10 days. Give us some perspective first about what your teams have seen at the border with Ukraine and whether the flow has increased or is it slowing in these past few days?
I don't think the flow is slowing in the last few days. I think it's a bit fluctuating. Some days there is a little bit less people, some days there's more. I think it also depends on what's happening actually in Ukraine and during the war. But we are expecting more or less the same flow, so to speak, of people over the next days or weeks even. At the moment, as you mentioned, there is over 700,000 yesterday in Poland, in Polish media, we heard the number 800,000 people that have arrived already in Poland. Mostly it's Ukrainian mothers with children, elderly people, but also, of course, there's quite a lot of foreigners who don't have Ukrainian passports. So a lot of African students, a lot of people from third countries who are also passing and fleeing the war.
Mm. These are people who had their lives, Monica, ripped apart in the last 10 days. And many have left their loved ones inside Ukraine. You mentioned that most were women and children because the men have stayed to fight on, right? What have they told you about their journey to Poland? And what is right now their short-term need? And what do you expect their medium and long-term needs to be?
So, of course, the journey is quite difficult already because, you know, the trains, the buses are absolutely overloaded. And then they have to wait for long, long, long hours, sometimes days, to actually get to the proper border crossing. And many volunteers from our side, but also from, you know, local authorities, they are providing humanitarian assistance along the queues, like going into Ukraine, but also on the Polish side. We know that the short-term needs, all the time increasing, I would say, are, you know, transporting these people, providing the shelter, providing food, providing some sort of legal assistance very quickly, like making them understand what is their legal situation in Poland and in the European Union. Mm. And then I have long-term assistance, which is growing, but also will be growing next days, is making these people understand what to do next and what they can do next.
Right. It is indeed growing, as we heard from the UN refugee chief earlier. Baba Baluch in Geneva, let me ask you about the scope of the crisis. UNHCR talks about this being the largest refugee crisis in a century. Why? What makes this the largest refugee crisis in a century, especially when you consider that a country like Syria, for example, has had, what, over 6 million Syrians leave the country during the conflict there? What's different this time around?
Indeed. I mean, the similarity in terms of the devastation wars bring is the same. Its impact on all human beings, as you've heard, it disrupts life, it tears apart people's living, you know, and there is death, destruction, and displacement. What we are saying is we have not witnessed this pace in recent times. 100,000 people, or even more than 100,000 people, fleeing within a day. The number is 1.5 million within the 10 days. This is just not an ordinary number. Mm. These are human beings and millions of others who are inside Ukraine that have been affected. So this has not been seen. This is Europe's fastest growing humanitarian crisis of the century.
Right.
And at what's encouraging, just let me add there, is the outpour of support that we have so far seen, the best of humanity in the neighboring countries.
Right. 1.5 million, Babar, have fled Ukraine. What do we know about those who are still inside, those who are internally displaced? How bad is the situation for them? And is UNHCR able to reach them?
It is really bad. You cannot get a clear picture in terms of the overall number of displacement in the country because it's unpredictable. It's very dangerous for people. We know that millions are on the move in terms of seeking safety inside the country. UNHCR has remained in Ukraine and in the neighboring countries. We are bringing help as much as we can. We are also bringing supplies from other places, like, for instance, Poland. We are taking things inside Ukraine to help in the western parts of Poland, but also in Kyiv, where we had some supplies. We are trying to go out and support. And as it was mentioned, the way things are going, the fear is more people will be affected, more will be displaced, more will become refugees. And that's why it's very important that the guns have to fall silent.
Alberto Nijhart in Brussels, as Babar said there, tremendous solidarity, especially from European governments, some rare consensus from member states on how to deal with the influx of refugees from Ukraine this time around. Tell us more first about what the EU has done to help those who have been coming in.
Well, to begin with, the European Commission has provided operational assistance and has coordinated efforts of the countries neighboring Ukraine. But clearly, from what Monica and Babar have said, it is clear that these countries will not be able on their own to offer sufficient protection or to cover the needs in the short and in the long term of those fleeing from Ukraine. And so for this reason, interior ministers of the EU have met last Thursday, and they took the unanimous decision to introduce or activate better the Temporary Protection Directive. And this is an unprecedented and also historic moment. This is a group-based form of immediate protection that gives residence rights and access to the labor market to those who are eligible for the protection. It also gives the possibility to the many families that are escaping Ukraine to enroll their children in school.
Alberto, but can Europe cope? I'm sorry to interrupt you, because it is very important what you're saying, but I want to know whether Europe can cope. What are the challenges first, you know, short and medium term for European governments, you know, with all these refugees coming in?
There will be challenges, and I think it's also important that the public at large is aware of them. There are many questions. To begin with, where will these persons go? Some of them, of course, will try to reach their family members and extended communities. And so there is a question about how the countries that will receive the lion's share of those running for their lives will guarantee access to the labor market or sufficient housing. There are also questions about those who won't be able to travel across Europe to find safety. So what sort of solidarity will be guaranteed by the European Union to these persons? Another challenge in the medium term will be how to support financially local authorities as well as central governments that will host Ukrainians and other groups running from Ukraine.
Okay. Well, let's pause a moment and take a look at how this crisis has been dealt with compared to previous ones. As you've heard from Alberto there, for the first time, the EU has proposed triggering a special rule called the Temporary Protection Directive to help Ukrainian refugees. They'll have the right to live and work in the bloc for up to 3 years without a visa. But the directive's text was changed to only protect Ukrainian nationals and long-term residents. Hungary and Romania are offering cash for food and clothing and to educate Ukrainian children in local schools. The UK is setting up a scheme to help businesses sponsor Ukrainian refugees. Now, let's compare that to other recent humanitarian crises. With 6.6 million refugees, the war in Syria is the world's biggest refugee emergency. European countries took in 1 million of them, mostly between Germany and Sweden. And there are 2.6 million registered Afghan refugees. The EU agreed in December to resettle 40,000 of them. So, Monica, let me come to you in Poland first, because the way Poland has reacted to this crisis is very different from the reaction when we saw the migrant and refugee crisis at the border with Belarus a few months ago. How do you explain this?
I don't have words for this. We are actually quite, I mean, it's very difficult emotions as well for us, because me, myself, even we were on the Polish-Belarusian border for months, actually pulling people out of the forest. So you can imagine like what kind of strange feelings we have when we then go to the Polish-Ukrainian border and you don't have to actually, you know, crawl in the forest in the dark to provide food and water to children and people. And here, you, like, we welcome them with the open arms. We are absolutely happy that the Polish government is, you know, welcoming so openly, and we are welcoming openly as well, Ukrainians, but and non-Ukrainian, you know, citizens. But it is still appalling. Just yesterday, we heard again about, you know, a group of 8 Syrian people being pushed back to Belarus on the Polish-Belarusian border. So this discrepancy, this kind of unexplainable, you know, policy is still there and is still in place. And the things on the Polish-Belarusian border are still happening. Right. I don't know what's the idea behind this. I think I could use the word racism, but I don't know if it's racism, if it's just a, you know, EU policy narrative for many years and not opening the borders so much to non-neighboring countries.
Right. Let's ask Alberto about what he thinks about this discrepancy. Alberto, how do you explain this? What should we make of Europe's schizophrenic refugee response?
Well, first of all, I understand perfectly the claim that what we are seeing now are double standards. And indeed, the situation in Poland is quite illustrative of a trend that we have seen for many years. You mentioned before the Syrian crisis and the inability of member states to reach consensus on how to divide responsibility and offer protection for the many hundreds, thousands of people who were also running from a conflict. I think that possibly the geographical proximity to the war itself may have led to a significant change in perception in the European public. But it is also clear that it also depends on European governments and their response and how they frame the emergency that determines a change in sensitivity in the public at large. To go back to what Monica was saying, I think we are seeing clearly an overwhelming outpour of solidarity from ordinary citizens, but it's also clear that this will not be sustainable in the long term. And mm-hmm. so member states and the EU as a whole will be called to its responsibility to offer protection to everybody. In the case of this conflict, to Ukrainians and others who are running for their lives from Ukraine. But it's also necessary to offer protection without discrimination on the basis of nationality or any other factor. And for this reason, it is important. And I hope that this will be a watershed moment that will also determine a change of intent and more courage on the part of the EU to have a consolidated common European asylum system in the future.
Barbara, your thoughts about this? Europe says it will give these refugees extended rights to stay in the European Union, but these protections, from what I understand for now, will only apply to refugees who are Ukrainian citizens, right? So what happens to all those who are from third countries, the third nationals who've also tried to escape this conflict? What concessions should be offered to them?
Safety, I mean, that's very important. Everyone who is running a situation of war and conflict has to find safety. You don't become refugee by choice, and countries have legal and moral obligations, and that's why it's very important that humanity cannot be applied selectively. Saying that, also we have seen, even in the other crisis, neighbors have stepped forward hosting refugees at the same scale. I mean, majority of Syrians, majority of Afghans, majority of those who are fleeing conflict in Africa and the Rohingyas, they have been taken care by the neighbor. That's why the word solidarity is very important, even in this context as well. And we see when the civil society, when populations, when the governments, everyone comes together, we can deal with humanitarian disasters better and give some hope to the people who are affected by world conflict and war.
Monica, on solidarity, is the Polish government, are Polish authorities preparing for the presence of these refugees in the long run, you think?
I don't think so. First of all, as it was said already, it's unprecedented. So I don't think any government would be able to handle it well, you know. But just over a week ago, just when the war started, the Polish minister of, you know, internal affairs came on TV and said, "We are very well prepared. We have been preparing for many weeks," which was absolutely not true at the time. A lot of or majority of the work which is now being done, I think it stays on the shoulders of local authorities, non-governmental, you know, groups, initiatives, organizations. I am seeing this every day. I was also talking to many representatives of local authorities. They quite complain for the lack of, you know, support from the government. And I don't think that there is a sort of a long-term thinking already in play. I would love to hear about this if there is some, but I think at the moment it's just really sort of dealing with emergency.
Yeah. Speaking of dealing with the emergency, Barbara, there's been talk, there's been discussion of setting up a humanitarian corridor that would allow, you know, safe passage for the refugees, for the people who are still inside. How would that work? I mean, and would that help, you think?
It's needed. I mean, first, we need this war to end. I mean, as you heard, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi, as far as bombs are falling, people have to run for safety. And that's why we are very concerned those people who need a safe passage to get out. It has to be implemented right now. That's the need inside Ukraine. And then we can try to support on humanitarian basis in terms of agencies like UNHCR and others, ICRC and others in terms of kind of making this possible. Logistically, it is possible, but security-wise, we need the guarantees from all sides to make it happen, and it should happen as soon as possible.
Security guarantees, Babar. What about financially, money-wise? What are the needs right now?
We launched, as the UN and the humanitarian larger community, we launched a week ago a funding appeal for $1.7 billion for just the short term. And this was for inside Ukraine and also for those countries that have been receiving refugees. The support has been outpouring in terms of finances as well. There have been many contributions. We, as UNHCR, have received more than $200 million to support refugees and also people inside. But this is just short term. More will be needed. More support will be needed. It's also encouraging to see not governments, but individuals, businesses and foundations coming forward to contribute.
Support is coming, but more is needed, you say, Babar. Alberto, I'll give you the last word. The EU's migration policy, looking ahead now. I mean, there were proposals for legislative reform to EU migration and asylum law on the table even before this Ukraine conflict began. Do you see this being hurried now? And do you expect concrete steps to be taken towards addressing the gaps that have existed?
Like I said, this is a historic moment. And to answer your question, I believe that the divisions and the sticking points of the past will not be forgotten overnight. I think they will remain divisions and disagreements between member states in the south and north, west and east of Europe. But what is clear, based on what we are seeing now, is that there is more that brings these countries together than set them apart. So the question is, in this context, if the broader set of reforms will be able to move forward. I believe that it is, again, in these moments that the best and the worst of persons and countries and governments is revealed. And I truly believe and hope that the EU will manage to find a common ground on the policies that are badly needed. One last point on what was said by the other speakers. I think there is also a change of mindset that is needed at this point from the short term to the long term. Because again, the need is now to provide food and shelter. But in the long term, there will be a need to provide housing and work to those escaping from the conflict. It is this kind of thinking that will underpin sustainable reforms in this area. Without it, I think this is going to be an emergency that will not be solved in the short run by common efforts by European countries.
So solutions needed in the short term, but also in the long term. Thank you very much to all three of you for a very interesting discussion. Monica Matus, Barbara Baluch and Alberto Nyhart. And thank you for watching. You can always watch this program again anytime by visiting our website at aljazeera.com. For further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is at AJInsideStory. From me, Fully Batibo, and whole team here in Doha, thanks for watching. Bye for now.